Dealing with the Consequences.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke with three echoes of the financial meltdown. Ever since the insurance giant AIG collapsed, it's been raising money to repay taxpayers for an $80 billion bailout. This morning, AIG struck a deal to sell off its Taiwan life insurance unit for just over $2 billion. Echo number two, there are reports this morning that Bank of America's finally agreed to hand over documents showing the legal advice it got when it was buying Merrill Lynch. B of A executives are accused of hiding Merrill's losses from shareholders. And number three, the first criminal trial to come out of the financial crisis gets underway today. Two former Bear Stearns hedge fund managers are charged with misleading investors about how their funds were doing. Marketplace's Amy Scott has that.
Think back to the summer of 2007 when the mortgage meltdown was just beginning. Losses on subprime mortgages wiped out two hedge funds at investment bank Bear Stearns. Ralph Chaffee and Matthew Tannen managed those funds. The government accuses them of telling clients their money was safe when they knew otherwise.
Essentially, what the government has charged here is that these defendants were telling their investors one thing, but privately believed something very different.
Robert Mintz is a former federal prosecutor, now with the law firm McCarter & English. He says the collapse of the hedge funds didn't bring down Bear Stearns, but he says the case has become symbolic.
There will be a temptation by some to hold these two responsible for what was really a much larger problem. And the defense is going to argue that they're really being made scapegoats.
If convicted, Chaffee and Tannen could spend up to 20 years in prison. Peter Henning teaches law at Wayne State University. He says the defense may have a hard time finding jurors impartial to a pair of rich guys from Wall Street. New York Magazine recently reported that Chaffee had to sell two of his three sports cars.
There is certainly in the United States a natural bias against the wealthy, and someone who has to sell two Ferraris certainly is going to come across as wealthy and less sympathetic.
On the other hand, he says the government has a tough case to make, that the defendants intentionally defrauded their investors. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And this week, we find out how profitable the surviving big banks are as they report quarterly earnings. European stocks are down slightly, about a third of a percent. Asian markets were mostly higher today. On Wall Street yesterday, the S&P 500 gained 0.4%. The NASDAQ was flat. The Dow closed at 9,885, a gain of 21 points. Earlier in the session, though, the Dow was flirting with the 10,000 mark, as it has been doing for a few weeks. We hear people call 10,000 a psychological barrier for the Dow. But is it really meaningful, or is it just a number? Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Remind us where 10,000 fits in the Dow's world historically.
Well, you have to go way, way back to 1906 for the Dow first closing above 100 points. And it pretty much stayed there through World War II. It first got close to the 1,000 mark back in 1966, but it didn't quite touch it. And it stayed in that trading range for about 15 years before it really surged. So it takes a long time for these milestones to be reached.
Well, how important is a milestone like 10,000? We like to talk about it. It's got lots of zeros, but does it matter?
Yeah, it's a big round number, but most analysts are going to tell you that it's purely psychological. On the other hand, you do have to look at the rally that we've seen in the last 6 months, and that is very real. I mean, you look at the NASDAQ, it's up more than 35% since the start of the year. The S&P 500 up around 18%. So there is something going on out there. Analysts are wondering, though, what's the staying power?
Do stock traders actually buy or sell based on a number like that?
Well, I don't think the big institutions do, but you do have to keep in mind that it does work as something of a promotional tool. It causes people like you and me to talk about the stock market. That gets people's attention, and it makes them think, well, gee, maybe I need to get in on this. So you can look at maybe an initial pop after the 10,000 mark.
And some people wondered, oh, maybe that is awfully high. Maybe we're done for this rally.
Well, that's the other hand, if you will. It's a marker that can fan skepticism and make people think that we've come too far too fast.
Bob Moon is Marketplace's senior business correspondent. Always great to talk to you, Bob.
Thanks, Bill.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by SunGard. SunGard Availability Services operates 5 million square feet of secure data center space dedicated to keeping people and information connected. More information at sunguard.com. And by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Have you seen the new Fox TV series, Glee? It's about a high school glee club, and the cast is always breaking into song. Other people's songs, Beyonce, Kanye West. The show is having quite the effect on digital music sales, as Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite tells us.
With album sales falling, artists are only too happy to license their songs for use on screen. Anne Donahue of Billboard magazine says shows like Grey's Anatomy produce the occasional iTunes hit, but the songs from Glee are consistently popular. She says that's partly because the show has a strong feel-good factor, but the music industry as a whole is relying more and more on small-screen exposure.
TV is incredibly important to music sales, and part of that is the response that the viewer can have.
Donahue says a lot of viewers watch Glee on their computers after it's aired, and it's a top-rated show among women from 18 to 34. They're keen music buyers.
While they're watching TV, they will have their computer right in front of them, and they can buy the song if they want it. It's really an immediate way of connecting kind of the art and the commerce.
By the time the first four episodes aired, viewers had downloaded more than a million of Glee's songs from iTunes. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And speaking of the music business, it turns out Michael Jackson's first posthumous single, This Is It, it's not all his. Pop veteran Paul Anka says he co-wrote the song in 1983 while working on a duets album with Jackson. Only after Anka went public with his claim did the Jackson estate give him some credit, along with half of the song's profits. This is Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
This is it. Here I stand. I'm the light of the world.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.